Good evening and welcome to Late Debate. I'm Katie Hannan and joining me tonight I have Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin West and party spokesperson on defence Jack Chambers, independent TD for Roscommon Galway Michael Fitzmaurice, Fine Gael senator and Shannon spokesperson on health Colm Burke, senior lecturer at the School of Health and Social Science Tralee Institute of Technology Patrick McGarty, and Elaine Loughlin, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. We want to hear from you, so do get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email us on latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebaterte. Now, if the Taoiseach was hoping that Dara Murphy's resignation would draw a line underneath the controversy, he would have been wrong, because today the questions were still coming. And here's what Leo Varadkar had to say about the Dara Murphy affair earlier today.
There are two questions here. One is, did Dara Murphy break the rules or not? And that requires an investigation. I think there should be an investigation, and he's willing to cooperate with that. There's a wider question as to whether the rules are too lax. And I think they are too lax. And I said that in the Dáil yesterday. And as a consequence of that, I wrote to the Cean Corla and also to the party leaders to suggest that we ask the Standards Commission or an independent body to come in and overhaul this regime, which I think is too lax and is open to abuse. My view is that investigation should happen first. And if the investigation finds that he broke the rules, then absolutely he should pay it back.
And that was the Taoiseach speaking earlier. Colm Burke, the news that Darren Murphy was moving to this shiny new job in Europe broke just 3 days, by my reckoning, before you were asking the people of Cork North Central to vote for you in that by-election. Did it become all about Darren Murphy from that point on for you?
Well, I was coming on the Late Debate that on the Tuesday night when the text started coming into me that the announcement was being made. It certainly didn't help my campaign. I think the timing of it was unfortunate. We worked on in it. We got a great vote. We got the biggest increase in vote of all the parties in the by-election in Cork North Central. Our vote went from 17.8% up to 21.1%, a 3.3% increase.
Do you think you could have made it over the line if this hadn't landed on you?
Just look, I suppose any election is a snapshot in time. The election was on the Friday. That was the snapshot in time, and it certainly did affect it.
You must be raging, are you?
I suppose politics is, look, you get up, you shake off the dust and you start all over. And I mean, I'm now focused on the general election for Cork North Central. I have a great team around me. We had a great election campaign. People worked extremely hard, and it was the most united team I've ever seen working for Fine Gael and Cork North Central in 25 years. It was a great campaign and I loved every bit of it. And I think as well, we have challenges in North Central that I want to work on. I've been working on them. I've been working as hard as any TD, even though I'm a senator.
Well, maybe not as hard as every TD, as it turns out, Colm.
Well, all I'm saying is that I was working and continue to work. There's a lot of challenges in North Central. We're dealing with them, whether it's schools, whether it's primary care centres, whether it's a new hospital for Cork.
So just coming back, on with that job. I appreciate that, Jack. But coming back to the Dara Murphy issue and the way the Taoiseach has been dealing with it over the last number of days, do you think that's going to be helpful to your chances, whether it's February or March or April or May next year?
Well, I suppose where the electorate in North Central, I suppose, are a bit concerned and a bit, it's more than I suppose to be concerned, a bit annoyed, is that, look, they voted for a person in 2016. The person wasn't available in the constituency to the extent that a TD is normally expected.
Would you have come across Dara Murphy down there?
I think I would have met Dara in the last 12 months. I probably would have met him about on three occasions and not necessarily in Cork. I don't recollect where I met him, but I would have met him on three occasions.
But you're saying attitude, he wasn't active on the ground there?
Well, my attitude, look, I was active on the ground. My attitude was to get as much work done as I could, and my focus was on Cork North Central and the electorate of Cork.
But what I'm asking you now is that what you just said there in terms of how why people are annoyed that they sent their guy up to the Dáil to represent them, and from what we can make out, he wasn't doing the job that they had hoped he would do. The Taoiseach has not really acknowledged that in the last number of days as this controversy has unfolded.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm not here to judge anyone about what work they were doing. I think it is accepted that Dara Murphy was doing a lot of work in Europe. I was in Europe myself for 2 years as a member of the European Parliament. It's a very time consuming job. But, you know, the issue is I'm there now as regards working for North Central and trying to do my best for the constituents of North Central.
Are you being helped or hindered in that way by the current controversy and by the handling of it by your party
leader?
Well,
I suppose the only thing I would say about North Central, as you are aware, I was not allowed on the Fine Gael ticket in the last general election. I think it was a mistake. And I think, you know, my attitude now is to get on with the job that I've been selected to do, is to fight the next general election, to again try and improve the Fine Gael vote and to win the seat and retain the seat in Cork North Central. But it's about representation of the people, making sure that every issue that comes up that I can work to try and resolve those issues. And that's my whole focus.
Okay.
It's not about just raising and talking about issues, but it's also about trying to identify solutions to sort those issues out.
Mick Barry, what's the mood in that constituency?
Well, you used the word, Katie, annoyed.
Well, actually, that was the word that Colm used.
Yeah, I think it's more than that. I think a lot of people are livid at what happened here. I think it was seen as extremely cynical, the way that Dara Murphy jetted into Dublin on Tuesday night, went into the Dáil, cast his vote to save the bacon of his colleague, Housing Minister Owen Murphy, and then within minutes of the vote, tendered his resignation to the Ceann Comhairle. But of course, that is dwarfed by the cynicism and disrespect that was shown to the people of Cork North Central by being elected by them to do one job and then doing a different job entirely for an entire 2 years. The point has been raised that there are many TDs that have other jobs, but I don't think there's too many have another job in another country, all right? And I think this isn't just a Dara Murphy issue. I think it's a Fine Gael issue because the top personnel in Fine Gael, in the Dáil, in the Seanad, and on the ground in Cork North Central, knew damned well what was happening, and they turned a blind eye to it. Right?
Yeah,
they turned a blind eye to it.
Can I
just ask you, just before you respond there, Conor, because that is a point.
Yeah.
Surely the whip, Sean Kine, and before him, Joe McHugh, must have been made aware, clearly, of what votes Dara Murphy was going to be available for, or more to the point, was not going to be available for.
No.
So this can't have come as a surprise to anyone in the senior level of your party.
Well, the point I would make is I was elected by the councillors from around the country to Seanad Éireann. There's a lot of senators who work very closely with councillors, making sure that the views of councillors are aired and are, I suppose, raised at very senior level. I've worked both with councillors, but I've also done work in the constituency, which is far beyond what your average senator is doing.
Okay, and you've had a very good couple of great ads for yourself there now, Colm. But to respond to that point, there must have been knowledge of what was going on here for a long time. And there must have been arrangements made with Dara Murphy to facilitate.
Well, I'm not a member of Dáil Éireann. I wouldn't be aware of what arrangements are there between the whip. The only arrangements I'm aware of is the whip in the Seanad, and as regards complying with that, but I wouldn't have been involved. And that's genuine, because the TDs would have their own meetings.
But you know the way parliamentary parties work.
You must have been aware yourself, Colm, as to what the story was in relation to what Dara Murphy was at for the last 2 years, right? Maybe if you were a fool, you wouldn't know that, but you're no fool. Everybody in the Fine Gael organisation at any kind of senior level knew what the story was here. And in doing that, we're complicit in it.
I want to let the rest of the panel in.
I'll just finally make this point. It was a con on the people of Cork North Central and showed extreme disrespect to them. And that's why people are there.
No, I want to let Jack in now. I'll let you in again, Colm.
I've dealt with issues in Cork North Central, fighting in relation to schools.
Colm, you've had now several goals to explain how great work you've done in Cork North Central. Jack.
No, look, Dara Murphy was an absent TD for 2 years. He totally neglected his duties as a constituency TD, as as Colm has said, he met him on three occasions in the last 12 months. The fact that he's no parliamentary output, little or no parliamentary questions, no contributions in the Dáil. And clearly there was an arrangement between the whip, the Taoiseach and Dara Murphy around this, because the Taoiseach actually stated that he was doing an excellent job, a very good job in Europe. The Taoiseach actually said that, and he said his main job was in Europe. So the Taoiseach clearly endorsed this, which I think shows a complete absence of leadership from Leo Varadkar to allow one of his TDs to rock out to Europe to clock in when he's coming in and out, and to show a total disregard. Dara Murphy should have done the honourable thing 2 years ago, which is to resign his seat if that was his main job. I think another important point that's actually forgotten, the only time we did hear Dara Murphy in the last 6 months that I can recall was on the Sean O'Rourke programme. And on that programme, he was trying to encourage Leo Varadkar publicly to call a general election and inject political uncertainty into the general debate prior to Christmas at the time of Brexit. And clearly he was doing that to suit his own personal interests.
Well, we don't know why he was doing that, James, because he obviously knew
he had a job in the pipeline.
You may speculate
and,
that.
And he knew he would have to resign his seat, and he obviously was the only time we ever heard from him enter any local or national debate in that period. So I think for a Fine Gael TD to actually use his own future personal position and undermine the integrity of an already fragmented Dáil shows a total disregard for democracy.
Well, he wouldn't have been the only one who would have been calling for an election
shows Fine Gael's attitude to this Dáil, and the fact that Taoiseach is so blasé about the issue and has shown no regard for the actions of his TD.
Yeah, Michael Fitzmaurice, in relation to that, the Taoiseach's response to this. He's very much holding the line. I mean, I know we heard him there in that clip saying if there will be an investigation and if he has broken the rules, he should pay the money back. But I think it's quite clear to everyone that the issue here is the rules were so lax that it does appear that he actually was following the letter of the law here. But so there will be no repercussions for this.
Yeah, I think the first thing, I think that Taoiseach has been disingenuous, because I think my understanding, and this is from reading it on the papers, is that if you resign, obviously SIPO, or there can be demoral consequences, to put it simple. Look, at the guy, for his own sake, when it was a full-time job in a place that takes a few hours to get out to, on a plane, you can't just jump in a car and shoot from one place to the other. He was left in a situation that he should have actually resigned then. I think that no one got denying that they didn't know within the Fine Gael party that this was happening. It has sort of left a grave error of judgment on behalf of our Taoiseach that he let this continue on. Now, look, there's other things being talked about. I've heard it over the last few days where they're talking. I even see journalists are asking TDs now what else are they at in the line of work. Like, you know, a lot of TDs, including myself, I might go home on Summer's Night and jump up on a tractor and spend the night bailing. But at least you're an hour or 2 hours from getting to your job again. Do you know what I mean? Whereas if you're in a country that you have to get a flight to and go through airports and be gone for the week, look at, and if you're getting what you're getting, the figures that's being quoted, obviously it's a fairly full-time job, a fairly intense job if you were to do it. And to be honest about it, if you're trying to do two jobs like that, it's virtually impossible to do any of them right.
Right, Elaine.
Yeah, just to pick up on as well what Michael had to say about the Taoiseach there, I think it was interesting. The past 3 days, he's actually used the same phrase of the system is too lax. Now, if the system was too lax, why has it taken the resignation of Dara Murphy and all this spotlight to be shone on him and how he has rightly, within the rules, claimed expenses and salary since 2017, since taking up the second job. And that's where the system is too lax. But we've known the system is wrong and is, you know, made by politicians for politicians for an awful long time. And then the second thing as well is, again, the Taoiseach was out this morning saying that the investigation should come first into Dara Murphy. If it's found that he was wrong, then we'll deal with that. When we know that the Ethics Committee, the Oireachtas Ethics Committee, who are the body who would deal with these complaints, cannot, because they can only deal with complaints relating to a sitting TD.
Yeah, there's some suggestion now that it'll be that complaint that was lodged by Fianna Fáil into the Committee of Members' Interests, that is going to be passed to the Committee of Procedure and Privilege, who could then pass it on to the Clerk of the Dáil, who can then consider it.
Yes.
But I don't think there's a single person in the Dáil who believes there's going to be any adverse outcome for Dara Murphy.
And my understanding on that is the clerk may look at it and he will see, as we have all seen, that Dara Murphy clocked in for 120 days. So therefore, he qualified to get the full allowances. So he has done absolutely nothing wrong. And that's maybe the thing. If you were even a public servant or working in another multinational company where you have this fob-in system, you fob in at 9 o'clock in the morning and you probably fob out during your lunch break and then you fob out again at 5 o'clock to show that you've done X amount of hours in the day. As a TD, you just fob in and you can go 2 seconds later, 2 hours later or 2 days later if you want to stay in the Dáil.
Can I come in on one thing there, Donal? The difference between the public servant and the TD is, and I think that this needs to be noted as well, that a TD, if they fob in and head off to the country, won't be in, they're going every 5 years or less, 4 years or maybe three and a bit, like it's looking like at the moment. They go in front of the people and they'll be judged fairly rapid. The difference in the public servant is that they won't, if they were doing that, they don't have to go in front of the people every 5 years and the people will decide on where you go. TDs could go into the Dáil, they could go out of the Dáil and go to a meeting that have, you know it yourself, Elaine, as good as anyone. They're at 10 different things. They might go into the Department of Agriculture, they might have meetings with the bank representing someone. They could be in and out. That it's not a thing that you're going to be.
Yes, but on sitting days, Michael, is there not an onus for a TD to be in for a good bit of the day on sitting days?
I want to bring in Pat, because Pat, you deal with young people, you lecture young people in IT in Tralee. And this comes up, the attitude, the shifting attitude of young people towards politics and the body politic.
Yeah, there's one thing that I've noticed, especially in the last number of weeks, that there's anger and there's public distrust. And it's interesting, really, Michael, you of all people, oh yeah, look, we're different. Like, as far as I'm concerned, as a public servant, if I'm here tonight in RTE, what I do is I have to get permission to go from my college. I come up here, I clock in, I clock out, I take public transport. I'm fully accountable and that's it as far as I'm concerned. There's no difference in the world. Like when we come along basically and see, you know, public representatives, as far as I'm concerned, like there's four or five of us around on this panel tonight. We are public servants. That's what we serve, the public. I don't think there's any... Granted, you may go to the people every 3 to 5 years or whatever. That's your choice. As far as I'm concerned, there needs to be accountability. You have accountability in the wider public service. I'm a public servant. I should be held accountable. I should be fired. No public sector union should be defending the indefensible, as far as I'm concerned. You know, and like the bottom line here is it's anger and public distrust. And that's the type of stuff that a lot of listeners here tonight, you know, what have they witnessed in the last number of weeks? They've witnessed the Dara Murphy affair. They've witnessed a scandal, a printer scandal, where nobody is held accountable. Now, it'll be the straw's going to break the camel's back, you know, sometime soon. And
do you find up, Pat, you said there, like even in recent weeks, you've noticed more anger, more you know, distrust. Do you really sense that there's something new in the air?
I don't know if there's something new in the air, but like, remember a few years ago, the water charges, what happened there, you know?
I'd say Mick remembers that, all right.
Yeah, I'd say you do, Mick. But like, it's something like that, really. And sometimes it's a plague in all your houses. It's not just Fine Gael. It can be Fianna Fáil, Labour, Sinn Féin, the Greens, Independents, whatever, you know? So like, the fear I'd have here really is, you know, that with public anger, with distrust, what will happen here very easily is like people will actually go along and vote the extremes. And that's it, be it right wing, left wing, whatever the case may be. And that's the fear I have, really, in many respects, really.
I think it's important, though. I think the vast majority of councillors and Oireachtas members in this country work extremely hard. And, you know, Michael raised a very important point. Michael could do 10 meetings down his own area in a day, and he can't clock in anywhere, but he's still doing the 10 meetings from 8 in the morning until 10 or 11 at night.
Or he can go to 10 funerals and 10 coffee mornings and not be at an Oireachtas committee.
In fairness, now to Oireachtas members, they're out there trying to get jobs into their areas, working with people.
They're also trying to get re-elected, Colin. And a lot of work that is generated is with an eye to the next election.
But in fairness, people do... They have the best interests of their constituents at heart in trying to deliver for their constituency. And I think that's extremely important and we shouldn't forget that. I agree fully
that you have to be accountable. There's no one saying you don't have to be accountable. Dara Murphy's situation has tainted every politician
now.
That's the public out there, and you're correct in what you're saying. The public out there are saying, sure, they're all the same.
Yes.
And it is sickening for politicians that do 80 to 100 hours every week, because whether people like it or don't, You won't be getting elected if you're not putting in 80 to 100 hours a week, 7 days a week. And what has happened is now, and yes, you're right, out there now, no matter where you go, and you could be working morning, noon and night, you'll get the people, or the same thing on Facebook and all these other media outlets, they say, you'll see them saying, they're all the same, that's the crack that's going on up there. And I tell you the big danger in this, in my opinion, there are good people out there, you know, be it in business or whatever, and you know what? They won't go for it now. And that's the other side you have to watch.
OK, I'll just give you a sense of what the people out there are saying about our discussion tonight. Here's a text. Fine Gael are done. The public aren't fooled by the Dara Murphy nonsense. Fianna Fáil have proven to be irrelevant. Our only hope are decent independents like Fitzmaurice, says Breed. That's a fan of yours out there, Michael. Maybe the media could look at other TDs who seem to have been in semi-retirement. Enda Kenny, Michael Noonan and John Deasy all must be delighted about Dara Murphy. Can you say those TDs are representing their constituents well? Another tweeter out there. Leo has been Taoiseach for a couple of years and only now suddenly wants to review the system. An election is on the way. And we've got more and more and much of it in that vein. But I want to move on because obviously... The other big issue that was in the Dáil today and on the streets of Dublin today was housing and homelessness. There was that protest organised by homeless people almost entirely, as I understand it, through social media that marched through Dublin city centre. And many of those on the march were actually families living in emergency accommodation themselves. And meanwhile, in the Dáil, Fianna Fáil TD John McGuinness had this to say.
On the vote of confidence, yes, Fianna Fáil sat on their hands. Did the same thing with Simon Harris, sat on her hands. But the fact of the matter is that a minister is acting as one with the government, with the cabinet.
Your time has expired, Deputy.
If someone puts down a vote of no confidence in the government, I'll vote for it. Because that's the way it should be. And I honestly hope that this supply and confidence arrangement, which is a farce and accommodating all this stuff, comes to an end quickly in the new year so that at least the electorate can have their say.
Well, Mick, there's your chance. Have you got private members' time coming up? I understand it. If John McGuinness does make good on his pledge there and vote against a confidence motion, it would be even Stevens if everyone voted as they did this week. Are you tempted?
It would be even Stevens. The vote on Tuesday night was 56-53. Dara Murphy has gone. Thomas Pringle wasn't present. And now John McGuinness has indicated that he may vote against the government. So that would bring it to an even Stephen situation. You asked, do we have private members' time? We don't have private members' time this side of Christmas. We do have private members' time in January. We're waiting on confirmation as to whether that is January 16th or January the 22nd. And we would be open-minded. We'll have to look at our options.
But you would consider putting down... And actually, John McGuinness was very specific today. He said it should be a vote of confidence, not in a particular minister, but in the government.
Well, any private member's bill or motion that we put down won't be determined by John McGuinness. It'll be determined by what we think is right at the time.
But I'm just trying to ascertain how precarious the situation might be right now for the government.
Well, clearly the issue of health is going to be a major issue in January. The indications are that the number of people on trolleys could be at an all-time high. We'll have to come back after the Christmas and have a discussion about what we use our private members' time for. And we'll look at our options.
So you're saying you're considering a motion, no confidence in Simon Harris?
I'm saying that we will look at the situation when we come back in January and see what the best option is at that time.
Okay. Jack, what do you make of your colleague's intervention today?
That's John's view. Clearly, he's frustrated with the housing minister and with the failure across many areas of public policy. And I think that's reflective of many within our party who are frustrated with implementation across many areas. But we are heading towards a general election. So what John said was nothing new, really, except he gave his own prerogative and view on the position. But the party position is that we believe the likes of Owen Murphy, Simon Harris, should be held accountable to the Irish people. They should justify their inaction across many policy areas with the Irish people. And we are heading for a general election in the springtime. That is the factual position where we're at.
Okay, what about the Sinn Féin motion that's going to be put down on Tuesday as regards a rent freeze? Because we know since last month that Fianna Fáil has changed its policy on this, so can we expect Fianna Fáil to support that now?
We have to address a lot of the issues around the rental market and how and included in that is a rent freeze.
Will you support a rent freeze?
Pieces of legislation, our front bench discusses it and we form a collective position on the Tuesday of the week where a bill is introduced for at second stage. And our position will be known then.
Well, you'd have to struggle for credibility now if after making the big announcement before the by-election, right after the by-election and you have your two TDs elected, you say, well, actually, maybe not this time.
No. Like, this is going into second stage and I think my own view is that, of course, it should be facilitated through second stage and into the committee stage. But the party will form its position at the front bench and at the parliamentary party meeting. And that's where we'll set about what we're going to do next week. And that's how all parties decide on pieces of legislation.
You personally think we should facilitate this?
I don't think anybody should block a piece of legislation at second stage. I think it should be teased out at the committee and it should be examined in that process. I think that's that's part of what new politics should be about. And I think, in fairness, a lot of pieces of legislation have gone through second stage and are then teased out to see their policy impact, positive or negative. And I think that's been the spirit of how we acted in this stuff.
The reason I'm smiling, I think we need to be honest with people that if it's gone into second stage and it has to go into committee, I think there's something like, and Elaine would know better than I do, 64 or 65 bills stuck within in the cattle crush that's there at the moment that's not letting anything through. And I think if we're honest with people, there'll be an election before that's gone through. And, like, you know, you can dance on and jump all you want and promise all you want. And this is the big problem in politics. In the line of housing, my opinion is, first of all, the land agency has never got off the ground, to be quite frank about it, that was promised. Second of all, we have a department in housing of environment that's not functioning. There's no point in me talking about it. And you can have all the ministers you want. But as we talked about earlier, it's accountability. We have a children's hospital fiasco. We have a housing problem. And there are senior civil servants that will have their jobs and have their pensions and they will stay there because if the system won't be broken because the in my opinion, they are the permanent government and by God, it's hard to change things.
OK, I know you want to come in, but I want to let Pat...
Just agreeing with Michael as well, when we go along and look at the fiascos, when we look at the national hospital fiasco, it all comes down to accountability and that's it. And as far as you talk about new politics, you need to talk about what we call a new public service accountability to the taxpayers of this country. That's fact. We have seen time and time again, we've seen the hospital... I was with a friend of mine earlier on tonight who is going through cancer, and the experience that he went along and went through, it's just, it would bring tears to your eyes. And again, no accountability. We have a health service that, from an OECD point of view, why are we pumping? We're one, as far as the OECD is concerned, you know, we pump. We're one of the highest spenders in health in the OECD. Why in God's name are we getting the outcomes that we're getting? None. There's a reason being full of, there's interests in there, and from the point of view of right across the public sector, people need to be held accountable. There's no doubt about that. And from the point of view of the politicians around the table here, it's your job to do that.
OK, Colm.
Yeah, just on housing. First of all, I think it's important to realise that, you know, 22,000 houses will be built this year.
No.
Both public and private. In Cork City alone, there's 1,000. There's 1,000 houses being built by Cork City Council as we speak. There'll be 400 delivered by December. So there's a lot of local authority houses being built. There's 22,000 going to be built this year. Next year is 26,000. And this year alone, planning permission was granted for over 35,000 different residential units across the country. But we're making progress in relation to, we came, Jack, from a situation.
If you want to talk about you want to give a history lesson, Jack, is it be accountable for your for the failure of your government?
250,000 people became unemployed in the construction industry when he left government. 250,000 people.
We had
15% unemployment. 15% unemployment. We're now down to the lowest unemployment level that we've had since January 2008.
What about housing?
In 2016, there were 16,000 planning permissions granted.
We want delivery on
I'm going to say we have heard the figures about housing ad nauseum this week because we've had the new housing figures. We had a housing debate this week. We all know what the figures are. Yep. We also had all of those people on the streets of Dublin today who are living the reality of emergency accommodation.
We also have an increase in population, which is the highest population levels we've had in 170 years. That's where the demand is coming from.
But maybe the targets should be reviewed, Colm. Do you think that maybe there may be a time now that the numbers, the targets that were set into rebuilding Ireland are simply not reaching the levels we need to reach for the numbers of people who are becoming homeless?
Yeah, the targets we've set is 35,000 houses per annum. We're reaching that target. It will take another 3 years because the turnaround time from providing services for servicing houses, whether it's sewers, whether it's water, whether it's roads, that takes time, and we will achieve that within a three-year time period. That's the target.
Okay, well, I will be delighted, Colin Burke, if you can come back into the studio on three years' time and we don't have the situation out there today that we have now. I will be delighted if that's the case.
Katie, we have 400,000 more people working now than we had 5 years ago. That's the reality.
Yeah, we agree with that.
I went on the demonstration today. The numbers there, by the way, were significantly higher than was reported in sections of the media.
Yeah, how many? Because I saw several hundred in some media and several thousand in other media. Where would you put it?
It was in the low thousands. But it was several thousand when the march moved off, right? When the march got to around Trinity College, one group went up Grafton Street and one group went for Molesworth Street, okay? But it was several thousand on the demonstration. And there were people there, as you say, Katie, who are in emergency accommodation. The banner at the front of the demonstration, there were mums and there were kids carrying that banner. And they're fully aware that the bickering that's going on around the table tonight has been dominated by a politician from one party, which has overseen 10,500 people, a record number, homeless, and another party, which voted effectively to keep the minister in charge of that in power on Tuesday night. And when we talk about targets, right, let's bring it back to Cork again. Cork City Council are going to build 400 new homes next year. There's more than 5,000 people on the housing list. At that rate, it's going to take 12 years just to clear that list. How many people are going to come on the list in the meantime? The only way to solve this is to say public housing on public land. There's enough public land to build 114,000 public houses. That's social and affordable houses. And that is a massive ramping up on what this government is delivering, because the government are looking in the main for market solutions. They're looking to social housing provided by landlords and enriching the landlords through HAP rather than building the houses that people need.
OK, I just got a text here. Can you please ask your panel why Ireland is the only EU member state with none of the legislated housing and tenure rights common across the rest of the EU, says Paul in Dublin. Just in relation to that rent freeze legislation, I presume you're still not on board with rent freezes.
No, I might have a different view in relation to letting. I have a strong view that we should be looking very much on 20-year leases for residential tenancies, a 5-year rent review, and leaving a lot more responsibilities to tenants in relation to the upkeep and maintenance of internally.
But not rent freezes.
Well, I think that is the way of providing rent freeze, where you've guaranteed rent for 5 years at a lower rent, and you get the same return back to the investor. And I think we need to look at innovative ways of dealing with that type of long-term letting.
Okay,
and
just
that's
a few.
What you have in the European Union, right across a number of European Union countries.
But you're in government.
That's
what we're in government. What are they doing about
that? I'm not in Dáil Éireann.
Just to give you more of a sense,
you're in Shannon, which has blocked a lot of pieces of legislation. I mean, like, this is Colm, and even in the by-election when it came to issues around the Defence Forces, talking about one issue down in Cork, and then in the Dáil and the Shannon, there's a complete policy contradiction. So I think,
politics. That's what politics is about. It's about being able to.
And what's the party policy on housing? You're talking about different policies that are that the minister
I have a view on something which is different from the party, I will go and work to try.
Why don't you get that view implemented in Fine Gael policy?
Well,
because it's not
that's
there.
That's what I work at. That's
but
why
but
I'm
it's
in
not
the
there. Why isn't there anything happening in that space?
Okay.
Legislation through from start to finish through Dáil and Shannon Éireann in relation to missing persons because I persisted on fighting with the Department of Justice, with the Minister.
I'm going to turn off your microphone in a moment, Colm, if we... through the chair. I just want to give you a couple of more texts. And this will chime a bit with what Pat was saying, I think. Politicians are greedy. They claim too much, pat each other on the back, sit on their backsides and wait for the big pension, which we pay for. No, honesty, I trust my dog more than any of them. And... this government have been in power for 10% of the history of the state. They have failed on housing, health and climate change. They must go out, says Luke. And then more about Dara Murphy specifically. The brazenness of Dara Murphy. Cork electorate vote him into the Dáil. And when elected, he says, to hell with Cork, I'm off to Brussels. But we're going to have to take a break there because we do want to talk about the Children's Hospital and the beef protests after these.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back to Thursday night's Late Debate. In studio we have Fianna Fáil's Jack Chambers, Independent TD Michael Fitzmaurice, Fine Gael's Colm Burke, Patrick McGarty from the School of Health and Social Science in Tralee IT, and Elaine Loughlin of the Irish Examiner. Oh, and Mick Barry as well. I nearly forgot you there, Mick. Farmers, the Irish Farmers Association today blockaded an Aldi retail distribution centre in Kildare, and they say that more blockades will follow unless there is an immediate increase in prices at the factory gates. Jack, would you support the action today taken today by the IFA?
Well, look, clearly there's total frustration amongst the farming community. The Beef Task Force hasn't met yet, and we've delays and delays from a lot of the commitments that Minister Creed met in September, and beef prices are still around 350, I think, Michael, per kilogram, €4 being the break-even price. So we've had a lot of promises, we've had a lot of commitments, we've had a coordination group that's been established, the task force, and hasn't even met yet. So I think that it's a reflection of the total frustration amongst the community, and it requires the intervention of the Minister to get the meeting to get people together. It won't be solved.
Do you support the action they took today?
Well, I support the beef farmers getting a fair price.
But it was an illegal blockade today at a retail distribution outlet.
Well, look, from my discussions with others, I know the particular retail outlet, I think, has a better relationship with farmers than others. So perhaps it was unwise to pick a particular retail outlet who has had a better process.
But you're not condemning the IFA for putting in place an illegal blockade.
Well, look, I think the IFA should be requesting the Minister to engage and to sit down at the table. I don't think this will be solved if we have an escalation of blockades again. We saw the impact of it in September, and I think the task force should meet, and that would be a better use of time by the IFA.
Okay, Mick.
Right, first of all, I think there's two things that need to be separated in this. Tonight, if you bring an animal across the invisible border here, there's 45 cent of a difference between killing the animal in Monaghan and killing the animal in Tyrone. And that's only a few miles apart. Second of all, 70% of our meat goes to England, so there's 45 cent of a difference there a kilo. Throughout Europe, seven countries are given 20 cent more per kilo. There is a major problem with the cartel, in my opinion, in the beef industry. I've wrote to Margaret Vestager, I think is the name, this week to ask her to do an inquiry into the Irish, the whole Irish beef industry, because in my opinion, it's not a thing, it's like biting at the toes of an elephant. It's going to take a while to take it down. And the second part to it is that, in my opinion, what was targeted today, and this is coming from a farmer, that I wouldn't have done it for the simple reason they were engaging with the task force. The task force met last week.
Aldi have said
that they are also doing scientific background evidence on the 30 to 36 months. Everyone has a right to protest. Let no one say that you haven't the right to protest. There are other retailers that I would have hit before I'd have hit Aldi, being quite honest about it. But there is, whether we like it or whether we don't, there's 10% of our meat, of the total meat produced in this country, only stays in this country. We need to solve the problem with the factories that are exporting the other 90% to be in China. There was all glee. We got America, we got Canada, we got China. We have new markets opened in Algeria, Northern Africa. But the problem is that with all this hysteria and Borbia telling us and photos being taken and ministers having announcements, the farmer is actually losing money at the moment. And in my opinion, this won't stay going the way it's going, because you're going to lose farmers. People have to get real in the line of the factories, have to get real. I believe a full inquiry has to be done, because these guys have to be put into their box. And also, Katie, I think that it's like taking the power back. I think the time is coming. And look, the big problem is an awful lot of different farming organisations at the moment. They're all shooting at the one stare, but you need to get them shooting together at the one stare. And I think farmers, sooner or later, whether we like it or whether we don't, will have to try and work together to put something around Ireland in the line of a meat factory that we'll start dealing direct.
Like the dairy industry.
There has to be foresight in this.
Why would this never happen with beef? Yeah. I often wonder.
Well, it happened years ago, Katie, in certain areas around the country. And to us, it ran, in my opinion, properly, because I'd be a shareholder and I'd run in and I'd say, look, I'm a shareholder, I want a few cent more. You have to run it like a business and give a dividend back. And there is great examples, the likes of the big milk outfits has really done well. But we'll have to do it in the beef sector, in my opinion, because we're being just walked on top upon by the big cartels in the meat industry.
But is it not the case, Colm, that people will just have to, if people want to keep Irish beef on the shelves of the shops here, that we're just going to pay an awful lot more for our beef? Is that not a basic?
Just to confirm what Michael is saying, look, there's only 10% of the beef produced here stays here. So 90% is going out of the country. The problem that you have, the unfortunate problem, we had IMP down in Cork, which was farmer-owned, and unfortunately it wasn't well managed and it ended up having to be sold off. And whereas the dairy sector controls the whole dairy industry, the farmers themselves control it. And in fairness, like if you look at the way the Kerry Group developed, farmers have done very well out of it. That hasn't happened in beef. Therefore,
so you needed a Dennis Brosnan basically for the beef sector.
You also needed to have farmers having a say in how it's operating, and that's what's happening in the dairy industry. And it's a huge loss that we don't have farmers directly involved in the processing and in the exporting, and that's a huge loss here. But we've got to look at this now. Beef farmers, I come from a farming background myself, and I mean, I understand very well that any of the beef producers at the moment are, you know, they're not making money, only for a single farm payment.
But is beef production in the way we do it here, for small suckler herds, is it actually sustainable into any medium term or long term? Yeah, please do.
It is sustainable if you get fair price for your product. Yes. We are producing a grass-based product that isn't marketed, that an animal reared in a feedlot is, bar the Chinese market, is treated the same as an animal that's abroad in a field for most of their life, bear the winter that they're in the shed being fed. And we're probably not marketing that. There needs to be a lot of stuff done on that. Yes, it can be sustainable. And let's be very clear on this. We are at no stage saying that the customer, the person that buys the meat The end user has to pay more.
But should we not be paying more? When you see how cheap beef is now in the Aldis and the Lidls and
well, if you,
Tesco's.
If the farmer got a fraction of what it is per kilo, if you look at the price per kilo of what it is, there's €20, €22, €30. There's meat in other countries being marketed at €42.
Let's look at the fractions.
But if you looked at the fractions.
Let's look at the fractions.
Okay, yeah. There's
figures have been produced which show that €10 is handed over for beef. Where does the tenner go to?
Yeah.
Right? €2 goes to the farmer who's looked after the animal for a number of years. €2.90 goes to the meat, the beef barons, the meat industry. And €5.10 goes to the retailer. Right? Now, there's something wrong there. When farmers are producing this beef and they're way below the European average, and some of them, a significant number of them, are being forced into poverty conditions. So the fact that they're organising and campaigning and trying to get a better deal for themselves and their families, I actually think there's a lot of people in the cities, they talk about an urban-rural divide, who have sympathy with that and who actually say, we'd like to see our trade union leaders, for example, campaigning a bit harder on our issues in the city and taking a bit of a leaf from that book.
I don't know about that. Now, we just got a text in here. The farmers break the law and get a free pass. Why?
Look at.
First of all, they don't.
There's farmers who are being forced into poverty conditions with their families. That's legal. And when the farmers stand up and organise and try and get a better price for their product, that's illegal. That says to me there's something wrong with the way the system operates, not the way the farmers are organised.
Okay. I think about between 70,000 and 80,000 beef farmers in this country. A third are profitable, so they're okay. A third are making money purely because they have a second job outside the farm along with the beef. And then a third are really, really struggling. So two thirds, you can say, are not making any money off what should be their primary focus income and primary source of employment. And I know, Michael, you were quite critical of the fact that they've targeted Aldi today. And I think maybe the reason why they did that is they see Aldi as perhaps an ally. They want the meat factories to give them a fair price or to at least give them enough money where they can break even. And that's not happening at the moment. So I think maybe the reason why they went to Aldi rather than some of the other retailers was maybe if we can put a bit of pressure on Aldi, who've been already kind of working with us, we might get somewhere. And the There are the profit margins in there. All of us around the table know that. So if there was a bit of tinkering with 1 or 2% here or there, everybody could make a profit.
Just on the beef task force, the chairperson of the beef task force has been meeting with people, not a full meeting, but I think there was a full meeting during the week. But he has been meeting
4 hours
with different groups about trying to increase that price because it's the only way forward. Otherwise, we're going to force people out of.
But hasn't Leo Varadkar come out in the last couple of weeks and said basically threw his hands up and said, look, we can't do anything about beef prices, unfortunately.
During the week, and this is the problem that's in the whole sector, he said that there's a price index there. That's the first thing, one of the things that was got in the task force. And bear in mind now that the task force didn't sit too long the other day. It sat for between 3 and 4 hours. I do think if you have a problem, you'd want to be meeting every week for a full day. But Leo Varadkar came out the other day and he said, it's there for anybody to see that the price of meat right all across Europe is between 20 to 45 cent per kilo different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I know they're private companies and you kind of catch them by the neck or whatever and say you have to give more money. But the thing about it is, we talk about Europe and we talk about partnership and working together, there needs to be a full inquiry done into the whole meat industry, what's going on and the way the, in my opinion, cartels are operating.
Well, that's your opinion now,
yes,
of course.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, indeed, and that's absolutely your own personal opinion.
Yes.
I just see a text in here. You should see how dear a cut of Irish steak is in a supermarket in Switzerland. Upwards of €20 for a smallish sirloin.
Yeah, that's right. So it vindicates everything I said.
Okay. Okay. Let's move on because I want to stay. We're running up against the clock and I want to get in the Children's Hospital story because today the chairman of the board of the National Children's Hospital was before the PAC committee and he said that construction of the hospital has been delayed by a few months. The current cost of the entire project of $1.73 billion may run over again and that if inflation runs at 7% for the life of the project, we could be looking at an additional cost of another $50 million. Jack.
Well, look, it's a scandal. And one thing, it keeps revealing that the officials who are meant to be hands-on with this have no idea where this train is going to stop and how much it's going to escalate. And one interesting thing, Sean Fleming, as chair of the PAC, was forensically going through the accounts this afternoon. And one thing that was revealed today was that 40% of the capital budget that Department of Health has is now for the Children's Hospital alone. And if you look at what the HSE are saying about that the trajectory of other capital projects is now impossible. So promises,
well, on that
promises around, for example, no, that's a fact. Anne O'Connor, deputy, said it's made a difficult situation with the capital projects impossible. So we now know that there'll be delays, despite hard hats and promises and ribbon cutting. Reality of it is for people out there who have been promised elective hospitals, been promised new maternity hospitals, that have been promised additional capacity in regional hospitals across the country. The Children's Hospital is affecting everything right now. It's affecting our healthcare budget. Okay. It's affecting our education budget.
Colm, the last time I spoke to you,
it's a total failure of government on this.
In the studio in Cork, 3 days before the by-election, you were confidently telling me that the announcement of the site for the new hospital for Cork was going to be made in December.
No.
So where are we on that?
The report in relation to what the HSE want is going to be, my understanding, it has been forwarded on to the minister.
We were being told that we'd find out in December where the new hospital was going to be built.
The identification of the site has to go through a process as regards, they have to...
Told me yourself, Colm, that we would find out in December where the hospital was going to be.
Listen back to the recording, I'm quite clear in it. The report has come in from the HSE to the minister setting out what the requirements would be for a new elective hospital. They have to go through a process of inviting interested parties to know about identifying the site. That's the way they have to do it, right? They have to go through...
My understanding of this, quite clearly, was that a committee was established in March of last year. Simon Coveney announced it to decide on the site, the best site for the hospital. And it was due to tell us... And then before the by-election, we were hearing, well, it'll be next month, it'll be December before we find that out.
There was a report to be produced from the HSE setting out what their requirements are and also identifying possible sites.
Are you getting a bit worried maybe that a 40% of the health capital budget is going into a hole out at St James's Hospital, that you might have to wait a bit longer for your hospital
about the capital budget for the health, it's $10 billion. So the Children's Hospital...
For the next 3 years, it's 40%.
It's not taking up 40% of 10 billion euros. So
no, it's taking up 40% of the next 3 years.
But it's not taking up 40% of the health budget.
But no, so, well,
maybe Mick Barry from the same
constituency. Are you saying the HSE officials are incorrect?
I'm saying to you
I'm going to ask Mick Barry.
Being provided.
I'm going to ask Mick Barry because he is from your constituency. What was your understanding about the situation of that hospital announcement?
The people of Cork have been told again and again since the spring of last year that their site for their new hospital will be announced before the end of this year. So let's say December 31st. If the site for that new hospital is not announced by December 31st, that is not something that's going to go unnoticed. And people are looking very carefully at the government and the representatives of the government in the city on this one. So let's keep a sharp focus on that.
Okay, I'm going to have to go to another ad break. Stay with us.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And I just have time for a couple of texts. Farmers feed us, deserve respect and decent pay. Positive text from Dan. Thank God for Great Ormond Street, said another texter there, I think in relation to our conversation about the Children's Hospital. We just have time for headlines from the Irish Examiner. New terror laws still hit by delays. Long-awaited measures to fight terror are still in preliminary stage. That's a story by Cormac O'Keefe in the Examiner. And there's a picture of a child there holding up a homemade poster in housing protest in Cork today. Every child should have a home for Christmas. And that's it. Tonight's programme was produced by Brian Lally. Research was by Regina Henley. The broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon, and Harry Bookless was on sound. I want to thank my panel for coming into us this evening. Have a good weekend. And now it's over to Cathal Murray on Late Date.